loved the TV series when I was growing up. I loved the music. And to be able to turn it into a feature film and really take it from a Cold War series to this, you know, to bring it to modern audiences and cinema is something that is there. Without a doubt, the most challenging films to produce.
Welcome to another episode of Sitting Around Talking Movies. And we were off last week because Bill McCuddy, hello Bill McCuddy.
Hello.
Was in Washington, D.C., but we're back. And we're here as usual with Bill Bregoli.
That's right, I'm here.
And I'm Neil Rosen. And that was Tom Cruise, who was talking about his new movie Mission Impossible Fallout and, you know, wants to pay homage to the TV series, which I remember. With Greg Morris and let's see how many
people. Barbara Bain, Martin Landau,
Leonard Nimoy after a couple of seasons joined after Star Trek.
Who was the guy? Who was the guy?
Martin Landau.
No, who was the guy that they put the team together every week?
Yeah, I don't know.
Peter Graves.
That's right. He was the guy who had to accept the mission.
Yeah.
Who was the voice on the tape recorder that said this? Tape will self-destruct.
I don't know if anybody knows that, actually.
Because, you know, in Charlie's Angels, everybody knows it was John Forsythe. It was like, hello, angels.
And,
you know,
blah, and blah, then blah. Bill Murray.
And you know they're doing another Charlie's Angels.
And who are going to be the angels?
Two women I've never heard of, one of which is British, but Kristen Stewart will be one of the angels.
Kristen Stewart. No kidding.
That'll make money. That's a smart move.
Interesting. Is Bill Murray back? Is the, who knows? Know. All right, so Mission Impossible Fallout. Why don't you tell us about it?
Making a lot of money.
Number one.
Listen, in a summer where things have been challenged in terms of being a slam dunk, you know, this guy is back. Tom Cruise is back. He's got, you know, the MacGuffins and the storylines don't really matter. I mean, it's really just an excuse to link one huge action sequence to the next. But the team is back. When I say the team, Ving Rhames is back.
Ving Rhames, cops came to his house because they thought he was breaking into his own house. Little piece of news. Do you guys know this?
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah.
It's everywhere.
Okay.
We have the meats. He does the Arby's voiceovers too.
Oh, okay.
They scare me.
Is the biggest opening of any of the Mission Impossibles, right?
Is it? Yeah. I mean, listen, I thoroughly enjoyed it. It's a touch long, and I highly recommend, like many things in the past, that you see it on the biggest screen you can. But Tom Cruise delivers. I mean, this is the whole Ethan Hunt like character is his James Bond. It's his Jason Bourne. You know, it's got a tremendous halo jump scene where they jump out of an airplane and
they need oxygen because the HAY, AHA stands for high altitude.
Right.
So they jump out of a pressurized airplane into unpressurized space. And Tom Cruise did it. The director, actually, when I saw it, they had the director, Martin McCoy, introduce the film. And one of the sillier things was he said, Tom Cruise does this for you, the audience.
Oh, God.
It's not the paycheck. But he emphasized that several times and talked about the jump and how they had something like 90 different takes of that jump.
Wow.
He did 90 jumps?
Yeah, because, and part of the reason was they had to shoot during a particular part or a particular daylight when the sun was just going down.
Yeah, they were doing the magic.
They shot it. Even though it takes
5 seconds after the magic hour or whatever. It's supposed to be over Paris, but
supposed to be over Paris, but it was really over the United Arab Emirates.
Well, I guarantee you that Tom Cruise did not do 90 jumps. I bet they filmed 90 jumps, but think about all the stunt guys that probably were Tom Cruise.
Sure.
Look, he makes a big deal out of doing a lot of his stuff, and I'm sure, and he definitely jumps out of that plane, you can tell.
Yeah.
Because his face is right in the camera. But listen, let's hear from the man. What did he say about it?
This sequence basically takes place over Paris. We're at very high altitude, above 35,000 feet, and we're opening just above the Grand Palais. And we're doing that so that the aircraft that we're in looks like a commercial airliner, and they don't know that we're military and we're jumping into the Grand Palais. And that's why the halo jump.
And speaking of stunts, they left the take in where he broke his ankle and forced production to shut down for 6 weeks. That take is in it, and the audience I saw it with all went, ugh.
And you said, Bill Bregoli, that you can't really even follow the plot, but it doesn't matter.
No.
Henry Cavill, they throw in as a kind of a rogue tag-along agent that
ostensibly works for the CIA.
Right. And there's a couple of good twists in it. I will say that when somebody pulls a face mask off, you're like surprised that it's I'm not going to go into it. There's two, maybe three. What did you think, Neil? There's like two or three really good reveals in it.
Yeah, the first face mask reveal. And I always thought the face mask was the cheesiest part of the whole thing.
Yeah, but it's become such a part of it.
The first one was pretty funny, actually, because it deals with a celebrity.
You know, I will say this about this one. They've become less and less about doing a big con, like The Sting, or every episode was on the television show that he's paying homage to. It's more of just a straightforward action film now, in the Bourne or in the Bond kind of vein. And that's why I like some of the tricks that happen in this, you know, some of the reveals and surprises. But I think it's pretty solid.
You were able to follow the plot. No, but Bill was...
There's a major thing in that helicopter scene at the end that's in all the trailers that's not in the movie. And I'm giving something away, but it's not... anything away. If you've been watching the trailer for this thing for like the last 3 months, the helicopter that he flies, and Tom Cruise knows how to fly a real helicopter, goes careening into an oncoming train. And then right before you see what happens there, it goes, Mission Impossible coming, blah, blah, blah. That was in all the teases, and it's not in the movie.
You know, Martin McCoy told the audience... that Tom Cruise was supposed to train for 6 months to learn how to fly the helicopter. It's an Airbus helicopter. And they said, well, you got to sit in the classroom or sit with an instructor every day for 8 hours. And Tom Cruise supposedly said to them, yeah, but what about the rest of the day? So supposedly he trained for 16 hours a day and then finished his certification in 3 months.
Do you think
these are the stories he loves? These are the stories that the Scientology Church makes sure that this is the guy that does his own stunts, stays for 3 hours at the red carpet, signs everybody's autograph. I mean, he deserves every success he has, in my opinion.
How old is Tom Cruise now?
54, I think.
I thought 57 somewhere, but
57?
No, I think he's 54.
We're going to find out right now.
All right.
In the meantime, I have to tell you, hey, Alexa, how old is Tom Cruise?
56.
Tom Cruise is 56 years old. 50. He was born on July 3rd, 1962. Did that answer your question?
Yes, thank you, Alexa. We're going to have you as a guest every week because you know more than we do.
So 56 years old, that's crazy, you know? So
you remember 56.
Would you say that in this particular movie, two-part question. One, people are going primarily because they know Tom Cruise is doing his own stunts and they want to see this crazy shit. And two, do you think that how much longer do you think Cruise can keep on doing this?
Well, this is the conversation we have all the time about Tom Cruise. First of all, of course they're going because they know he does do. They do a really good job of releasing the videos of him hanging onto an airplane or hanging outside of the helicopter. Every movie has one going up the world's tallest building in Singapore, I think it was. They make a big deal out of it. So, of course, it becomes an event in and of itself. You have to go see this thing that he did. How much longer can you do it? Liam Neeson. Look at Harrison Ford.
Yeah, that's true.
They went a long time. Neeson actually sort of reinvented himself late in his career and you know, is getting a little long in the tooth with The Dreadful Commuter recently, but you know, he's going to be able to do it for a while.
Do you think that the stunts in this particular Mission Impossible, which is the sixth one that Cruise does, is he upping the ante? Are they more unbelievable than they are in the previous five, or just more unbelievable because he's 56 years old?
Oh, more. I they're just good stunts. I didn't even think about his age when I watched it. Though there were a couple of shots where I saw some wrinkles in his brow, but that was about it. But
yeah,
no,
he can look
fun.
A little puffy on some days too, which has kind of aged him in some of the scenes. I noticed that more in American Made than this film. But I think that what's good about it is it's not Skyscraper in terms of there are some unbelievable stunts in it, but it's not so unbelievably over the top that you go, this could never really happen. So I think audiences want credibility in some of the things they do, and they want a guy who walks the walk, and he walks the walk.
Yeah, and doesn't use duct tape.
Well, Tom Cruise, would you say that Tom Cruise would still be the number one box office star in the world after this number one release of this movie?
Of course. I mean, I don't think number one in the world. I don't know. I mean, The Rock probably makes a little more money these days.
The Rock's last two movies, just Skyscraper and that.
Yeah, but that has nothing to do with how much money he's made. Yeah,
Rampage. No. But I think they do well enough around the world that he's still pretty solid. Look, I'm thrilled to recommend something else this week, which is Cruz showed up on the James Corden Late Late Show, and he and Corden went for a 15,000-foot
skydive,
and Corden is it's laugh-out-loud funny. It's one of the number one things on YouTube this week. It's more viewings than anything else, so I recommend it. It's a load of fun. It's about 10 minutes long, and it's enjoyable, and Cruz is so comfortable doing this shit. You know, he's like, now we're going to 15,000 feet. You see they've got as Bill was referring to a little earlier, they're on oxygen right before the jump. They've got the little tubes in their mouth. Corden's scared out of his mind. He tandem dives with a guy he says looks like, yeah, I would buy drugs from you, but I would not.
I would buy weed from you.
I'd be attached to you going down. But they do it, and it's really fun, so I recommend that.
Yeah. I wonder if he hurt himself. I mean, the landing. I mean, if you watch the landing, I mean, not. Yeah,
they come down. They come hard, and then they soften it up right at the last second.
Well, I don't know. I'm sure everybody's seeing it. Bill Brigoli saw a movie. I interviewed one of the star voices of the movie, Will Arnett. It's an animated film called Teen Titans Go to the Movies, and it's based. It's the full-length feature film version of the, I guess, hit television show, Teen Titans.
The Cartoon Network series.
What's that?
It's the Cartoon Network series. And it's about these teenage superheroes, all have different powers. One of them is Robin, or Batman and Robin, and he's trying desperately to get a film franchise.
He wants his own movie.
He wants
Everybody
his own
else
movie.
Has got a
and
movie.
He's told
I
by the
my
director
movie.
Who's he told by the director of these of all the other superhero movies, apparently, that nobody's interested in watching a movie about a sidekick. And they do several interesting trailers in the movie. They show him, oh yeah, we're doing a movie about Batman's utility belt. We're doing a movie about Alfred the Butler. But we won't do one about Robin because no one cares about Robin. So he and his friend hatch a scheme. One of the schemes, which is hilarious, is that they decide to take away superpowers from all the other superheroes by going back in time. So they go back in time to where...
how do they get back in time, Bill?
It doesn't matter. They go back
animated.
In time. Right. They go back in time through some weird device. And at one point... Who is it? Kal-El, whoever Marlon Brando played.
Right. Jor-El.
Jor-El, right. He's floating the baby up into the little bassinet to send him off into space, and the kids talk him out of it and sing a song. And then Batman's parents are about to head into an alley after seeing a movie. Let's go into this
dark
horrible
alley.
Dark alley.
That's funny.
And they talk them out of it. And then they flash to the present, and none of these superheroes have powers, but they decide that doesn't work either. But what it really is a kids' movie that's actually aimed towards superhero movie fans. And if you have had either like or have had to suffer through as many superhero movies as we had, you'll get a laugh out of a lot of this movie. It really surprised me. And
I heard there are a lot of strong gags in it. I
yeah,
really
a lot
laugh
of strong
out.
Gags, some songs, and some
so
surprising voice
like
casting. Nicolas Cage.
Does it function like
Superman.
A...
Superman.
That's funny because at one particular point, Nicolas Cage was considered...
Right.
Play, so
I think it's better for adults than it is for kids. I don't know if the kids would even have it because I saw it. Of course, when I saw it, Warner Brothers had invited these regular folks along.
Well,
and they brought little babies, and the little kids just weren't interested that much as the adults were doing all the laughing.
Well, I interviewed Will Arnett, and apparently, he's the voice of the villain.
Villain, right?
The villain in this thing, and he was also the voice of Batman in the
Lego one,
in the Lego movie, and. He's a big voiceover guy, and he said to me, you know, that
we have the same agent.
He has kids.
He works more than I do.
And he said that, you know, it's a television series before this, like SpongeBob's a TV series.
Yeah,
they
that's
made a movie,
on the Cartoon Network.
So he was in the other room, and his kids are young kids, and they're watching this thing, and he would hear, like, these jokes in the other room on the on the TV, and he would go like, that's a pretty funny joke, and it would get kind of like a grown-up joke, you know? And he just became intrigued, and he started watching the movie, the TV episodes with his kids. I guess I had this a similar experience with SpongeBob with my daughter. It was like the same thing. I would, you know, she'd be, you know, I wouldn't watch most of this stuff. And then all of a sudden I heard a couple of funny lines coming out of the other room. And I'm like, you know, and you sit down, you're like, this is interesting. So then when they offered him the movie, he was like, yeah, I'd love to do this, because he became a fan of the TV show and, you know, thought it was a grown-up kind of thing.
It's fun. It actually is fun.
It's fun. All right. So
two quick points off what you said about documentaries. And one is that I can't believe the Mr. Rogers. Well, the things you watched with your kids and the fact that there was a documentary, which I will recommend, about Nicolas Cage almost becoming Superman. That the making of Superman, or the something about the Superman didn't happen or something like that. That's a fascinating. John Peters is in that as well. But you were talking about things you watch with your kid. I can't believe that this Mr. Rogers documentary is making so much money. And I think it's really good for us, because we've been talking about docs forever and saying how they've had this renaissance in the last 5 years since we started doing our television show and now this podcast.
Yeah, my sister went to see it, and she never, ever, ever would go out of her way to watch.
Yeah, it's attracting a mainstream. People are just going to see this thing because
Why?
It's about him. Because
people
it's
love,
because they grew up
Fred
with
Rogers?
Him, but also they're interested in the content. And so it's made something like $15 million, which is unheard of.
Well, the documentary, which I'm about to see, that I haven't seen yet, about three twins that were separated at birth, is also making a lot of money.
Yeah, and so is your Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
And the Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Notorious RBG, is making money.
So it's a great summer for that.
So that's good. That's good. Speaking about documentaries, I'm flipping around the TV the other day, and I come across this Billie Jean, this on HBO, this older Billie Jean King documentary, which works as a great companion piece to the Steve Carell, Emma Stone movie, Battle of the Sexes. And you watch it, and it's kind of, they have the real people there. What they didn't tell you in Battle of the Sexes is the woman that, in the movie Battle of the Sexes, is the woman that Billie Jean King has the affair with, her first lesbian affair, winds up suing her in kind of like a palimony suit.
I remember that.
And there's all these other... So if you watch Battle of the Sexes and you'll like it, and I love that movie, it was on my top 10 list, here's this great documentary. Just go to On Demand, if you get it.
What's
if you get
it
HBO. It's Billie Jean King. Just go to HBO and type in Billie Jean. Billie Jean King.
We don't know the title of anything, but listen to our podcast.
Pause it.
Have to look it up. It's like it's about Billie Jean King. You'll go there and look it
it's
up.
It's Billie Jean King. It's HBO.
Mine's about Superman with Nicolas Cage. You'll go and you'll look it up.
And it's and it talks about how, you know, how not only was she which the movie is, the movie with Steve Carell and Emma Stone is really about that match between Bobby Riggs, which was titled The Battle of the Sexes. This is basically her life story and how she just changed the face of not only women's tennis but women's sports and equal pay for women, and how she was a real, you know, champion of women's rights in that regard. And it's very interesting. Real interviews with everybody. I was intrigued in the movie version.
Bobby Riggs isn't still alive, is he?
No. Oh, they're also friends. She said, everybody thinks I hate Bobby Riggs. We were friends up until the day he died. She goes, like, it was, you know, Bobby Riggs was a hustler. He was, it's an act. He was not the chauvinist pig guy that, to the extent that it was depicted in the movie. You know, he's just, he was just playing a role. He actually said to her in the end before he died, we really did something good, didn't we? In other words, like, he was very proud of the fact that that match and that she beat him, although he's not happy with losing the purse money, but the fact that he lost, it actually enabled women in sports to make more money. It's a very, very interesting documentary. And again, if you love the movie Battle of the Sexes, I think it's a great adjunct to that, and fills in a lot of holes. And last thing on that, the husband's role,
I don't believe
which was a little ambiguous in the movie, that he was kind of complacent in her having those affairs with those with those other women, is also explained by the husband, the actual husband in this, about his role and why, you know, he just, you know, if his wife was fooling around with other people, why he just didn't, like, male or female, why he didn't walk away from that relationship.
Is it revisionist history, or you feel like it is what he felt at the time?
No, I feel like it is. It's an older documentary. This came out before Battle of the Sexes, and I believe what I was seeing was true. And it's good. Recommended.
All right, I'll
go
watch
to HBO. Short. It's like
15
minutes.
Speaking of going behind the scenes, our buddy over at Entertainment Weekly, Chris Nashawaty, who's been on our television show, but also as a guest on you know, has been, we've known for, did you realize he's worked at EW for 25 years?
That's amazing.
So he's now the head critic over there, and he's been working on this book for about, well, off and on kind of for 10 years. It's called Caddyshack, The Making of a Hollywood Cinderella Story. It's out now. It's been out for about a month or so. It's doing well. He's actually starting to go touring around at golf courses and like giving speeches and doing Q&As and stuff and doing book signings. So that's nice. He's got that going for him. And so I recommend the book. It's got a lot of great stuff about National Lampoon in it, a lot of great stuff about the origin of Saturday Night Live, how did you realize that Belushi was basically responsible for getting almost everybody from Canada and or around the country on the show up to New York, and that's how they got hired on Saturday Night Live?
I did not know that.
Well, anyway, lots of good stuff in it, lots of good nuggets, some stories I'd read before and other things, but if you haven't, I recommend Caddyshack.
You know, let me ask you about Caddyshack. There was this documentary that we reviewed on the television show many years ago, which was all about the National Lampoon.
Right.
And this guy, Kinney.
Doug Kinney, written about in the book, died.
Who drives off a cliff in a motorcycle.
Well, he didn't drive off. He was standing near it.
Yeah. Well, it's damn
in
big.
Hawaii.
It's kind of like up in the air, pun intended, on how he died. But, okay, whether it was suicide or whether he, you know, it was an accident.
Harold Ramis had a great line. He said he didn't commit suicide. He was looking for a place to jump when he fell, which is the, like, dark kind of humor that Doug Kinney would appreciate.
Well, so this documentary fully explores these people that came from, was it the Groundlings, these Saturday Night? And there was also, they show you film of Belushi and sketch days and stuff. And there's also a Gilda Radner documentary.
Talking about Drunk Stone, Brilliant Dead?
Right.
Exactly. Okay. Drunk Stone, Brilliant Dead. Right, which is about the Lampoon, which Bill Bregoli wrote for.
Yeah, finally, so the documentary conveniently ends 2 years before I got involved with the Lampoon.
But, I love Chris, and I'm sure the book is really good, but I'm just saying, if you've seen that documentary, does a lot of, you said that it does cover some of the same stuff. But
well, you saw Battle of the Sexes, and you still enjoyed this other documentary.
True.
So,
yeah.
I mean,
okay.
This fills in some stuff, a spoiler alert. Chevy Chase did a lot of coke. And so there's stuff in there that we already knew.
And did Caddyshack,
but
was that
people
the
like
first
Chevy Chase
anthem?
Talk candidly to Chris about this. So he went back and got some interviews from people that hadn't been talked to.
Did
Bill
this
Murray.
Precede Animal House? Was Caddyshack the first set like?
No, it came after.
Okay.
Animal House was this huge hit, and that's what they were trying to duplicate in Caddyshack.
Okay. Because, I wonder, and I we could talk to Chris about this if he was around, since we have such. We know him so well, but I wonder why the book was on Caddyshack, let's say, and not Animal House, since that was the first.
Well, it certainly talks about Animal House. He's always wanted to do the Caddyshack book.
Are you a fan of Caddyshack? Do you like that movie?
I had fun with it.
Yeah, I don't love the movie.
I don't love the movie either. I watched it. Bill and I did it like a couple of years ago on the TV show for some reason. I don't know what thematic thing there was a reason. I had to
70s comedies maybe.
I had to revisit the movie and. You know, when I saw it originally, I said, this is okay.
Bill Murray is good. Bill Murray had one scene when they hired him, and then he ended up being, ad-libbing a bunch of scenes.
But everybody's kind of over the top in the movie. I mean, look, it's not a terrible movie. I mean, it's okay. But, I mean, Ted Knight's really over the top, and Rodney's really kind of over the top.
Everybody was doing drugs on the set, according to the book, except for Ted Knight, who was like this very – he just had a heart attack, I think, but also is very holistic and took good care of himself. He didn't stay at the same motel the rest of them did. They put him up at a house because he didn't want to see any of it. And, the whole movie was...
Well, that's interesting because the character in the movie, he's distant from everybody.
Right.
So that kind of in character.
And I'm not going to tell you who it is because it's kind of a fun surprise in the book, but the idea of the gopher and how that completely became a through line for the movie was somebody's idea at the 11th hour. So that's my tease. And...
Okay.
Caddyshack, The Making of a Hollywood Cinderella Story. So you got to read that because it's good.
So yeah. There's a few television shows that I cannot wait for them to come back on television. And then you got to wait a year, whether they're on Netflix.
Sesame Street?
yes, Sesame Street certainly would be one of those shows. I'm very, sad to see that Handmaid's Tale is now. I have to wait another year to see...
But you hate it now. You said screwed the pooch.
I just said the last 2 minutes were like untrue to the series, but it's still the best show on television. I just was very upset with the last 2 minutes. Well, anyway, Better Call Saul is coming back on August 6th, and I had the opportunity to watch the first three episodes before they are released to the public. And I have to tell you, Better Call Saul is another one of those film TV shows that I just was really excited for it to come back. And, you know, the thing where you wait a year for these things is you kind of forget what happened like a year ago. And when you get these advanced links and screeners, some of them, they'll tell you, like The Handmaid's Tale, they say previously on Handmaid's Tale, which if you're watching it as a regular consumer, you get that. But with Better Call Saul, they don't give you a previously on Better Call Saul. As they, it reminds me of a way of like The Sopranos used to come back on, and they would send me advance DVDs, and there was no previously on. I'm like, I have to sit there with my wife for 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and have to kind of figure out, oh yeah, what happened there? What was going on? Because it's like a year ago. But anyway, that said, this is such a good show. I mean, the beginning, and I'm not going to spoil anything here, because every season of Better Call Saul, and this is, we're going into the fourth season now, the opening like 6 or 7 minutes is in black and white. The entire series takes place before Breaking Bad. Better Call Saul is a prequel to Breaking Bad.
Right.
Saul Goodman was the lawyer in Breaking Bad.
By the way,
Bad.
How many years can they get away with that before they bump up into Breaking Bad?
Well, I'm going to tell you.
All right.
Mike, who was the henchman to Gus, played by Giancarlo Esposito, is also in that, and it's how Mike started working for Gus, and it all takes place before Breaking Bad. But the first like 7-8 minutes of every season is shot in black and white, and it's post Breaking Bad, and it shows you where Saul Goodman, who's working, if you remember the end of Breaking Bad, he goes, I'm out of here. I'm going to probably wind up working in a Cinnabon in some mall somewhere. And that's exactly where season 1, 2, 3, and now 4 picks up, where you see Saul Goodman working in a Cinnabon and things are going on. And it's these little 7-minute things. I mean, they're great, and they're also episodic. They're sequential. You have to remember what happened in the one the year before.
Which is a challenge for you, as you said.
That one's pretty easy. And I'm thinking,
do you remember black and white more easily?
I'm thinking that, to answer your question, Bill McCuddy, that what's going to happen is that when they finally get up to speed with Breaking Bad, where Breaking Bad begins, although I think you could go a number of years without doing that, I think you could certainly pick it up from where these little vignettes are in the present day, because it's interesting. And I go, gee, I got to wait now another year to see the next installment of what's going on with Saul Goodman. Anyway, it's quite
good. I'm incredibly
good, confused,
but it sounds like you're happy,
and that's what's going on. The crux of the thing is Bob Odenkirk, who plays Jimmy, who morphs into Saul later in the show. We haven't seen that happen yet. And his girlfriend Kim are getting over the death of Jimmy's brother, played by Michael McKean. He died at the end of season 3. And you start seeing Jimmy, who will soon become Saul, start going to the dark side, as they say in Star Wars, and start doing con artistry things. And it's very good. It's so well shot, like Breaking Bad was in New Mexico. The cinematography is brilliant. The script is great. The direction is terrific. And the acting, I think Bob Odenkirk deserves an Emmy for this. I mean, he's just so good. Highly recommended. I do not think anybody who's been waiting for season 4 will be disappointed. The quality is great. And anybody who likes Breaking Bad who hasn't gravitated to Better Call Saul, I'd say, you know, binge watch the first 3 seasons before season 4 starts. If you like Breaking Bad, you'll really like this. Is it as good as Breaking Bad? Nothing really is, but it's Breaking Bad, a 4 apple thing. This would be maybe 3.5.
Breaking Bad still
a damn good grade. You still haven't
Breaking Bad versus Handmaid's Tale, which is better?
That's a real tough one.
What if they did a mashup?
I would say
combined
still,
the two.
I would say Breaking Bad.
Breaking
is,
a Handmaid's
they're
Tale.
They're both great, but I would still say Breaking Bad is the best 1-hour drama to me in the history of television. It's just so great. I would say Breaking Bad.
Notice how quickly Neil forgot that The Americans, which was previously his most favorite TV show of all time.
No.
By the way, the
Breaking Bad.
Gold Derby is now predicting what, you know, what's going to win in the
Emmys.
I read that. Is anybody watching Atlanta, this comedy series?
Yeah, well, that's neck and neck, according to Gold Derby, which you contribute to, with The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, according to Gold Derby, to win the best comedy series.
Yeah. I had a piece in there this week about The Wife, Glenn Close, the film with Jonathan Pryce. We'll talk about that in a few weeks. I went to a screening in the Hamptons recently, and it's a slam dunk Oscar nomination for her.
Well, let me ask you this. The other day on CBS Sunday, what's it called? You work for CBS.
CBS Sunday Morning.
So
CBS
Sunday
Morning.
Yes.
Henry Winkler was profiled, and Henry Winkler, I was driving yesterday, was on the wrap-up show on Howard Stern. He's out. I guess he's lobbying, and they say he's in that Gold Derby thing that you work for. He's an odds-on favorite to win for this TV show, Barry, that you love so much, Bill McCutty.
Which you still haven't seen, right?
No, I'm going to watch it. But I want to ask you, is Henry Winkler's performance really great, or is it just kind of like a...
It's not stunt at all. It's he plays an acting teacher, and you can tell he's met or been with or been taught by people just like this guy.
Well, they say he's the odds-on favorite to win the Emmy.
I'd love that, actually. He's very funny.
So you don't think if he wins, it's going to be one of these, well, you know... He did the Fonz, then he kicked around.
I don't know. Has he ever won before?
I don't think he ever won.
Fonz. I mean,
no,
he's had some guest spots on like Law and Orders and stuff that, or things like that, that he probably could have been nominated for. But I don't know if he's ever.
Henry is a wonderful guy. I got to tell you, and he has an amazing memory. I interviewed him once, and then I ran into him on the streets in New York like 5 years later, and he's like, Neil Rosen, the greatest critic in New York. How you doing? What's going on? I mean, it was like,
yeah,
how do
he's
you even,
a cool guy. He's
how do,
very sweet.
How do you even remember this?
He's
and then I spoke to him again, and he was telling me that he was writing children's books. And I said, well, at the time, my daughter was very young. I said, oh, my daughter, I read books to my daughter all the time. He goes, I'm going to send you the books. I'm going, yeah, sure. I said, yeah, thanks, you know. And I gave him, you know, my address and figured that week later, this big package comes up, all wrapped up in a bow. You know, told her my daughter's name, wrote a personalized note, and enjoy these books. And I mean, this guy is just a really nice guy.
Yeah. A mensch.
And it was very funny. If you watch that CBS Sunday Morning show, or he mentions this on that Howard Stern wrap-up show too, that he was actually offered the lead role that went to John Travolta ultimately in Grease, the movie Grease, and he turned it down because he didn't want, he goes, I was an idiot. He goes, I didn't want to be typecast because everybody knew me as the Fonz. He goes, I should have just taken the movie. It would have, you know, given me a whole higher
profile. That CBS Sunday Morning show, now hosted by Jane Pauley, does a lot of nice long format things. We talked about Michael J. Fox a couple of weeks ago and what a great interview that was. And so this sounds like it's worth looking up too.
Yeah, I saw it on YouTube. I did not see it on Sunday Morning. It's right up there. And... yeah, he's heavily going for that Emmy, and I think he'll get it. And I am now going to check that Barry show out. And how
Please
many episodes
do.
Are there? Five, six,
there's
eight?
Eight, so you can watch it and you can.
I know you love
binge
it. You talked about
hours.
Bill Hader. It was great.
Has a tremendous ending. One of the best.
As you've said.
I also saw Crazy Rich Asians at a special screening the other night,
which
with some
of
the cast members. That'll be opening in a couple weeks. When I tell you it's as good as Pretty Woman, or it's as good as any romantic comic, Working Girl. That's all I'm going to say. We'll talk more about it when it opens, but great screening at the Metrograph downtown. Really cool, just rehabbed.
And you
theater.
Saw this movie you wanted to talk about with Timothy Chalamet, who was in the
Call Me by Your Name.
Army Hammer
he's
movie.
He's famously sort of said he's not going to be in the next Woody Allen movie, or wouldn't have done it if he is in it.
No,
wouldn't
he's
have
in
done
it.
If
shot.
Known.
It's done. It's wrapped.
Yeah,
it's in
right.
Can.
Wouldn't have done it if he'd known what he knew. So. You know, we've talked a lot about the Oscar curse, and of course he didn't win an Oscar, but he was in the throw there. And this movie, which is called Hot Summer Nights, he's a teen up in Cape Cod who starts dealing drugs one summer, falls in love with a girl. It has a great kind of, not Tarantino-esque, but a gritty, cool opening feel. And it kind of falls apart in the end. I can't recommend it if you're flipping around and you think you want to watch this. It's not great. It starts out great, but you know, this is the thing about people that get a lot of attention and then suddenly everything they're in, everybody thinks is going to be amazing. And this is pretty good, but it's not amazing.
You mentioned that Timothée Chalamet, as well as His name escapes me. I can't believe he won an Oscar for The King's Speech.
Colin Firth.
Yeah, all these people are saying how they regret having worked in Woody Allen movies. So Ronan Farrow breaks another article in the New York Magazine this week about Les Moonves, who's the head of CBS. So my question is, and I've asked this question periodically since they shot this about a year ago, is it Netflix or is it Amazon? Who owns the new Woody Allen movie? Who's distributing it?
Amazon.
Huh. Okay. Will they release it in theaters or will they just dump it on the pay site or not release it at all?
No, I think they'll release it.
Think
if it's got any kind of an Oscar chance, they're going to... Look, we talked about this before the podcast. I think this whole pendulum is starting to swing back a little. Les Moonves is I think, going to skate on this thing. We were talking about Aziz Ansari. Netflix came out and said, we'd love to have him back. Like, this whole Me Too thing is getting... is a valid movement, but there are some people that are getting sucked into it that shouldn't be.
Well,
Woody Allen went on record a long time ago. The family is divided. When I say the family, the Mia Farrow's family is divided over whether there was anything inappropriate with Woody Allen. And it's kind of been documented. It's one person saying this happened that was coached, we believe, by Mia Farrow. Now, this sounds like I'm coming down on Woody's side. All I'm saying is there's a story here that hasn't been told about enough,
okay,
in
so
my opinion.
Before Aziz Ansari got caught up in the Me Too movement, before that happened, after he did his last season of his television series, Master of None, he said that, I think I might be done with this series. I've exhausted, pretty much plot points.
Well, that's why they said we would welcome you
right,
back.
With the
they weren't expecting
with the character.
That.
Now, the fact that... So it seemed to me that he wanted to head in a direction of making feature-length films and not doing that television series anymore. Of course, he'd probably continue doing his stand-up career. So do you think because of this now, he will go back and do another season of Master of None?
Well, I think he'd be really tempted to take the topic on straight on and try and say something about the Me Too movement in the next season, I think would be interesting.
Well, speaking about movies, which is what this show is all about, MoviePass went down. I think this company's going out of business. MoviePass is a very good Bill McCuddy. Yeah, people were complaining that they could not utilize their MoviePass to go see Mission Impossible Fallout.
Weren't there always restrictions, though? Wasn't it didn't you know that going in?
No, well, apparently, you got to book this thing. You got to be in the vicinity of the movie theater and book it a couple of hours before. But apparently the whole site crashed. MoviePass has said that they ran out of money. Then they got up and running again, and then they ran out of money again. The stock is down to a pittance, and NASDAQ says that if it goes any lower, it's not going to be...
They'll delist it.
Right. It's not going to have enough value for it to even be listed on
it
the
trades
on NASDAQ.
The pink sheets.
For MoviePass. And I've been reading some people's tweets going, I'm going, and we talked about this a few weeks ago, that AMC Theaters is coming out with a rival service that's double the money. And we were saying, why would anybody want to spend double the money and you can't even go to any theater, only AMC theaters? Well, now there's a reason.
No, I think we said that one of them was going to... There'll be one last man standing, and I'm not even sure it'll be AMC. Maybe somebody's going to do something even better than that.
Well, it seems like MoviePass's days, as you said, as you aptly said, Bill, are past, and I think the company's going to go under. But it didn't... Look, the company came out... Like Amazon, when they first came out and they were just selling books, said, we intend on losing, a lot of money the first few years just to get on the board and look at the company now. MoviePass also said we intend on losing millions of dollars each year.
Well, mission accomplished.
But they lost so much money that they're done, and no banks or financiers want to give them any money to continue this thing. It sounded like a screwball idea anyway. I mean, how much was it, Bill Bregoli, for month?
$20?
No, I think it was $9.95.
$9.95.
It got bumped down to $7.95 during a special promotion.
And you can go to a movie a day. And that just sounds crazy, even though
we do it.
Even though there's not 30 movies that most people would want to see, but it just seems nuts. And anyway, Quentin Tarantino's making a new movie. I'm very excited about that. There's some pictures that one picture that surfaced on the set of Brad Pitt's in it, and he's taking on Hollywood in this particular movie. And he does movies very rarely, and I was not thrilled with his last movie, The Hateful Eight, but he's like my favorite contemporary director, from Pulp Fiction to, which I just saw
this movie.
The
this movie has had a sort of a crazy incarnation. It was going to be about Sharon Tate and Roman Polanski, and then it wasn't, and then they're sort of in it, and then they're not, and then
they changed the release date. It wouldn't coincide with the day she died.
Right, it's had some unfortunate coincidences like that. On top of which, Brad Pitt and who else is who's the other big actor in it? They're playing really young. They're playing young, starving or middle-aged starving. Let's say starving, but like down on their luck actors. And Brad Pitt doesn't look like a down on his luck middle-aged actor to me.
No.
I mean, you know, we'll see. He's a good actor. Maybe he can pull it off. But
well, just the other day, I was watching.
And what's the working title? Is it 1969?
It's called Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It's coming out next year. Margot Robbie's in it. Leonardo DiCaprio's in
it. DiCaprio's
Brad Pitt's in it.
So Dakota Fanning,
Dakota Fanning is in it. Al Pacino is in it. Kurt Russell is in it. James Marsden is in it. Burt Reynolds is in it. You know, Damian Lewis is in it from formerly of Homeland. Was he in Billions now, I think? Emile Hirsch is in it. Tim Roth is in it. I mean, yeah, this is like an unbelievable
Quentin Tarantino movie. I mean, you can get anybody.
And you know, it's the synopsis on IMDb, since I'm not gonna, says a faded TV actor and his stunt double embark on an odyssey to make a name for themselves in the film industry during the Helter Skelter, which is, as you said, the Sharon Tate murders, Reign of Terror in 1969 in Los Angeles. So, sounds like, you know, Tarantino sounds interesting.
I think the working title when he first came up with this like 3 years ago was 69. And it was about 1969. And now it's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Well, I also read that Tarantino wants to take on, do a Star Trek movie. But they say they're like 7 or 8 years away from that actually coming to the screen.
He spouts up every now and then and says he wants to. He wanted to do the Bond movie, and he got Pierce Brosnan interested in that idea, and then that went away. We'll see. I think a Star Trek movie by Quentin Tarantino is probably just in his head.
What do you make of the Carrie Fisher situation that J.J. Abrams came out and said that?
I don't really care, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
I think it depends on how it's handled and if it doesn't seem creepy.
Well, apparently she did a lot of scenes that they didn't use when they were filming the last couple, and they're going to do that. But from my understanding, for all you Star Wars fans out there, is that episode 9, which is the concluding chapter of the Star Wars saga, although there will be many other movies, but George Lucas originally envisioned this as 9 installments, the three that he directed, Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi, those three prequels, and then the third one that J.J. Abrams directed the first one, executive producer of the last two. And apparently that last one was going to completely revolve the way the last one revolved around, the first
Han
one revolved
Solo.
Around Harrison Ford's character. This last one, it was going to apparently revolve around Carrie Fisher. She was going to be the star of that movie. It was her story. And then Carrie Fisher, you know, Princess Leia, and then she died. So I guess they got to go in another direction. So, you know, if you are a fan of Star Wars, one wonders what that movie would have been, you know?
It needs to be great, though, since they are doing it posthumously. And if it's not, it'll come under a lot of criticism, I think, that they just did it to do it.
Well,
but
they're not
CGI-ing
her or anything, you know?
Well, they're not. Mm-hmm. Who knows?
I don't know. Well, I wonder if you're a Star Wars fan, if you would rather see the movie that revolves around the Princess Leia character and have another actress play her, or have it CGI'd, or with that original concept, or would you rather just have a different script and just see the, you know, unused footage of Carrie Fisher? I am not the big Star Wars fan, nor are you, Bill Bregoli.
Not at all.
Nor are you, Bill McCuddy. So we kind of need Mike Sargent to answer that question, or somebody that is really into that. But I wonder. But you could tweet us and you can...
Hey, you've been tweeting us, and one of the things you've been asking us to do, three people have asked me this, to remind people what we like at the end of every show that we've talked about in earlier episodes. So to sort of... and I talked to Neil about this the other day, so I'm sure he has a list waiting. We talked about Barry...
As Bill Bergoli does him,
as well. We talked about Barry earlier, so I'm still hot on that show. I really like... and I hope it gets some Emmy love, as you talked about a moment ago. I also want to mention, still up on demand and did not get what it deserved, is John Hamm's movie Beirut. Tony Gilroy, incredible writer. And so if you haven't seen that, please do.
All right. I'm recommending, it's coming back for season two in a couple of weeks. Maybe it's either early September or late August, season two of Ozark, which I have not seen new episodes yet. But this is a terrific series. And if you have not seen season one, I'm telling you, you'll be addicted. First 10 minutes in, it's not one of these things that
it's a B plus. I'm not as high on it as you are.
Well,
I love Jason Bateman.
It's not Laura Linney and Jason Bateman. It's a great premise. I mean, he's a conservative guy in Chicago, money laundering for this very conservative, but for this this
here
guy.
Here we go. 8 hours. He's going
to screw up,
now.
And they have to. The guy that he's working for puts him in the Ozarks, and he thinks, okay, I'll start money laundering in these little backwater people in the Ozarks, and it's not at all what he expects it to be. And it's dark, it's funny in some places, but it's just really great story. So my recommendation is binge watch season one before season two starts, which will be very soon.
Bill, anything that you've been loving over the last year that we've watched that's still happening?
Are we talking
just recommend?
TV shows or
anything
you
movie,
want?
TV,
anything.
I'm waiting for the new season of Peaky Blinders to come up, which I liked quite a bit.
Yeah, you know, I love Giovanni Ribisi, and I have not seen that show. Is
Peaky
it?
Blinders? He's not in it.
Oh, I'm thinking of Sneaky Pete.
Right, you're seeing
right, right. What, who's in
Peaky Blinders?
My daughter keeps recommending, and her boyfriend keep recommending this Peaky Blinders. You got to watch this show. This is the greatest show.
In my defense, I hear Sneaky Pete is also good. But what?
Yeah, Killian Murphy.
So tell me about this show, because
it's basically Northern English. Well, they're Roma. There's this gang of guys who are basically gypsies, who all came out of World War I kind of shattered, but they hang out together and commit crimes, and they're a gang. And it has the energy of like a Tarantino film. There's a lot of violence, well choreographed. Snappy dialogue, though occasionally you may need subtitles to understand what they're saying. But I don't know. It was just arresting and fun. And the music, the soundtrack is interesting. They've had
Peaky
some problems.
Peaky Blinders, it's called?
Peaky.
The idea is that, you know, remember the caps that men would wear in the old days that kind of came down to a peak in the front?
Uh-huh.
Well, these guys would sneak razor blades into these caps, into the brow of the caps. And when they were having a fight with somebody, they take their cap off and start whacking the other guy in the face with the razor blades.
Ouch.
And blind him.
Oh,
that's
my
why
God.
They were called Peaky Blinders. But these
so
are
this
tough.
This is not
ones.
A comedy.
No, these are tough ones.
You're just getting that?
Yeah. Well, you know, it could be dark humor.
But the roles for women in it are actually quite good, too.
Shattered so. People
well,
after World War One kind
is
of screams comedy.
Is it one of these,
comedy?
Like, British thing? It's British.
Yeah.
One of these British things where, and the director that you love that was married to
Guy Ritchie.
To Guy Ritchie. Where a lot, you got to put the subtitles on because a lot of this is unintelligible. It's like these.
I think he said you had to put the subtitles
on. Yeah, you have to. I'm sorry.
I interviewed Annabelle Wallace.
Maybe we need subtitles when we talk to you. If you read those, you'd know what we were talking about.
Yeah. Now, earlier we talked about a couple of Emmy things in Gold Derby, which you work for, Bill. So,
Occasional contributor.
So let me ask you, you think there are any, like, you know,
we're making this podcast longer now. Is that what you're doing?
We're wrapping up. Do you think that we'll talk about this when we get to the week of the Emmys? But do you think? I just wonder. Do you think there's anything that's like just locked in there? Like, is best drama series just going to, you know?
I'm a bad judge of the Emmys because they always rubber. They find something like Veep and they just keep or Frasier or and all these worthy new shows come along and. It takes forever for them to catch on. So you're asking the wrong guy.
Oddly enough, the Golden Globes, when they do their TVs, catch on to new series quicker than the...
Yeah, that's true.
That is true.
Yeah.
That is true. In the meantime, goldderby.com, thanks for the there are 15 or 20 people that watch way more television than the three of us combined, and they're handicapping the whole Emmy race.
Well, there you go. So next week, what are we going to talk about, Bill Bergoli?
Well, we have The Meg.
The Meg.
Bill McCuddy's been looking for it. Sci-fi series, or sci-fi thing. I know Warner Brothers thing, and like all of you guys, we're all waiting for Warner Brothers to invite us.
We're going to try and catch eighth grade so we could talk about it, which is doing quite well. And
she'll be in ninth grade by the time we see the movie. But
yeah, she'll be in graduate school and college by the time we... No, we're going to try to do that for you, too. And more TV and more of stuff that's going on out there in the entertainment world.
Oh, there's another horror movie opening next week, Slender Man.
Slender Man. I would kill to be Slender Man. And apparently he does.
There you go.
Okay, we watch the bad movies so you don't have to. Slender Man probably,
ask my question.
Probably qualifies in that regard.
How do we follow you, Bill?
At Bill McCuddy on Twitter.
At Neil Rosenapples at Twitter. And again, Bill Brigoli.
Twitter's yesterday's news. Nobody does Twitter.
Okay, thank
Bill's
you.
Bill's going to get... I'm going to open... If I wanted to open up an Instagram account for you, Bill, would you do it?
Is that the one with the pictures?
That's the one with the pictures.
No, we don't want to do that.
That's
no photos,
the big
please.
Thing now, you know?
No photos, please.
Meanwhile, I'm sorry, but last night...
This
Kim
is going to go longer?
Kim Kardashian West was on Jimmy Kimmel, and my wife insisted on watching this thing. And I'm like... You know, and I don't keep up with the Kardashians, but is it Khloe, the one that's making $1 million per
you're asking the wrong guy.
Per tweet or something like that? Like anytime she endorses something, she just makes $1 million. This thing is just, I just don't get it. And I asked my wife last night, I said, can you just explain it to me? I'm not putting it down. I just don't get it. Why are people fascinated with this family that really, you know, I don't get it. And my wife's like, well, they changed the whole landscape of social media. And I don't know. I think I'm talking to the wrong crowd here. I don't think anybody can answer my question.
No, I don't. But it was brilliant to bring it up as a question
right,
that we have
well,
no answer
I don't
for.
Get it, but
I've never been a Kardashian fan.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, anyway, we'll talk about those movies that we told you about next week. And for
come
me,
on, you've
Neil
got
Rose
one more
Bill
story
McCuddy
to tell. Come on,
Bill
tell
Brigoli.
One more story.
No, my story is going to be just a thank you for listening, and thanks for sitting around talking movies with us, and we'll sit around talking movies again with you next week.